We're going to get started again in the Song of Solomon, and we've made it to study 6, and we're going to get involved in chapter 5 tonight with the Song of Solomon. And you know, in thinking about this, and as we got involved with doing it, if you go to New York or somewhere and you take in a Broadway show and it's a kind of an opera thing, they generally give you a handout, you know, to tell you what's going on, because a lot of times you can't really decipher it for yourself to a certain extent. And so this is kind of the way the Song of Solomon is, because so many people are talking. And so the talk goes from one to the other, to the other, to the other. And if you don't have some outline to go by, it's kind of tough to figure it out. And bless their hearts, Dr. Bulger, I guess, did that for us in the notes here, and and also in the how the thing is put together. And so once you get involved in that, you gotta get the understanding of who's talking and where they are basically when these words are being said, and of course the way they say them kind of differs a lot from the way we talk today. And so you have the situation that you know, you kind of need a sheet to go by to get the full understanding of it. But I'm trying to do it with my voice as we go through in my notes here. So that's one reason why it'll move around a little bit as we go through this, that you might be able to understand it. So we're going to pick up with chapter 5, and it's on 925 in the Companion Bible. And we'll start with chapter 5, because we ended up with the end of chapter 4 the last time. Now, here, there's two different ones speaking. And if you'll notice, there's a little division in the first verse of chapter 5. And so one of them is the shepherd has heard his espoused giving him a brief invitation to come to her, and his response is part of verse 1. And then the last part of this, this last line and a half there, this is the words of the court ladies to the Shulamite and to the shepherd. So you see, part of it is him talking back to his girlfriend, and then the court ladies get involved, because she is still with them, and evidently they've made it back to Jerusalem in chapter 5, or he has left after he speaks this, I think. Maybe it goes down through verse 3. He may speak a little more, but then he's not there for a while, and I think he goes back to his sheep or to his flocks for a little bit. And so, and then she starts recalling a dream that she had in chapter 5. From the second verse of chapter 5 to the 8th verse, she's telling the court ladies here a dream that she's had. about her beloved shepherd. But let's start with 5 and remember that this is the shepherd. He's heard the Shulamite's brief invitation, and he is making a response to her in the first part of verse 1. And it says this, I have come into my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. And then the rest of it is, eat, O friends, drink. Yea, drink abundantly, O beloved. And so this is the court lady saying, well, you know, I can agree with you on that. But let's look back at the first part of that first verse. And he says, I've come into my garden. And here he is saying, I am with my spouse. I am with my spouse or my sister as it is. And I know Doherty asked about that last week. Well, sometimes they are still in their relationship. He and her are sweethearts, but yet he's kind of looking at her as a sister because he hasn't tried to violate her or get fresh or do any of the stuff that normally would come about from that. So when you see my sister, you know she's still chaste. She's not been accosted by him in any way. Because he's looking at her like, well, you are my spouse, but you're like my sister too. I'm not going any further than that, see. So he says, I have gathered or used my senses to breathe in my myrrh with my spice. And you know, we talked about myrrh as being something that was distilled droplets. And to the taste, it's bitter. But to the smell, it's so sweet. It has a very pleasant aroma. And so that's what the myrrh is. It gets distilled. They steam it, and then they catch the steam and bring it, like making a whiskey or liquor, you know, and they'll bring it back to a liquid form. But it has a bitter taste, but it has a sweet smell. I've used my senses to breathe in my myrrh and with my spice. I have eaten or tasted with tongue and lips my honeycomb with my honey. So he and his girlfriend have kissed, and you know, as sweethearts would. And he says, I have drunk, or I am taking into myself my wine with my milk. So you know, but whatever effect it has on him, he's taking that with a little milk too, because he's not actually, I don't think, drinking wine. He is drinking in her smell and her taste of kisses or whatever, but that's as far as it goes. And he says, you know, with my milk. And I've never heard of anybody drinking wine and milk together. So,
it's like a recipe to be sick.
Take that as for what it may be. And then these are the words of the court ladies to the Shulamite and her beloved shepherd. And they say, eat, O friends, or partake, and drink ye, or get your fill. Drink abundantly, O beloved. So they're saying, well, all you two are together, that's your business. You do whatever you feel is right in that sense. They're not gonna beg her to get involved with Solomon. But now Solomon gets involved with her in chapter 6. So, I'll just give you a little heads up on that. But, verse 2. And somehow or another, the Shulamite and her shepherd, become apart. They're not together. And, so I think he goes back to his, flocks and to his, way of life. And, she has a talk with the court ladies and it's a dream. And this dream runs from the second verse of chapter 5 through the 8th verse of chapter 5. And let's turn the page and we'll read it. And it says this in 2. She says, I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. Four things there that she is using. Said, for my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. So quite a little bit to cover here in verse 2. And remember now, her and the Shulamites are apart, and this is a dream that she is conveying to these court ladies. She said, I sleep, or I was asleep, but my heart waketh, or was kept awake. It is, or it was, I heard the voice of my beloved that knocketh. He knocketh at my heart, saying, or telling me, open unto me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled, for my head is filled with dew. And dew there is 29:19 in the Strong, and it is the word tal, T-A-L. And it is to cover over in wetness or dampness. And my locks or my hair were the drops of the night or the same as the drops of dew. So this is the beginning of this story of her dream. So she says, I was asleep, but not in my heart. I wasn't asleep. I was awake and I was hearing my shepherd speak. I was dreaming that my shepherd was speaking. Okay. And she says, I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? So she has a question there. Is she going to get up and look for her beloved? Look for that Shulamite that she can hear in her dream. She's saying, wait a minute, I'm in darkness here and I've done took off my clothes. Verse 3, I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? In darkness, no less. You know, so she's in darkness. She don't have a light there. So evidently she got, I don't know where she put the light out or what, but back in those days, I guess maybe fire wasn't too easy to come by.
It got dark.
And so she was in the darkness, and it says, in darkness, she was thinking, boy, in darkness, how can I get dressed here? So I don't want him to leave. And I said, I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? She said, in the darkness, I don't really know if when I put my feet on the ground, I don't know if I'm going to defile my feet and get them dirty or not and have to redo it again. So she was in darkness. She was kind of in a turmoil about this thing because she couldn't do the things she wanted to do to meet her love. And then verse 4 says, my beloved put his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. So this again is the dream, you know, and she dreamed that she heard him. She knows that she's in the dark. She can't see. She can't get dressed. But then she can see enough to see that he's put his hand, I don't know if they're in a tent or where they are, but he's put his hand, according to her dream, he's put his hand around to unlatch the door to come into her. Okay? So she says, my beloved, my shepherd, put his hand by the hole of the door and added, he sent his hand away from the opening. He evidently changed his mind. And then she said, my bowels were moved for him. And you know, oftentimes when you read in scripture, especially the old scripture, when it talks about your inward parts or your bowels, it has to dealing with the heart. And so she says, my heart became restless for him. She was figuring out how she could go ahead and get the door undone and get him in, and get him into where she was. And so the plot thickens a little bit. You know, we're going down through verse 8 with this dream. This is still the dream. And then we get to verse 5, and the dream continues here. She says, I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with the sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock. So when she had went to bed, she had rubbed this myrrh on her, and her hands were still slick. So not only is she in the dark, but she's got another problem. And the plot thickens. Okay, it says, I rose up. I immediately got up to open to my beloved. My intent was to let him in. I was going to get him in. And it says, and my hands dropped or dripped with myrrh. This was the bitter distilled drops that she had put on her hands, but she could smell them and it smelled good, but the tasting was another thing. But evidently it was a kind of an oily type base because it must have been slick to the distilled drops must have been slick. And it says, and my fingers with a sweet smelling myrrh or the aroma, with sweet smelling myrrh aroma, upon the handles, there was evidently more than one handle. So it was something like a latch that had to be raised up on both sides. He couldn't just reach his hand in and raise up one and get in. It would still be held tight on the other end. So it was one of these drop-in lock things. So the handles there of the lock is plural. So which means there was more than one place to grab it to get it loose to where she could get him in. And I'm telling you all this, but you got to get it in your mind what the deal is in order to get the effect of it. So verse 6 says, I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. My soul failed when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. See, she thought he spake in the dream, but when she called out, there wasn't anybody there. So she said, I opened with effort to my beloved shepherd. It took her a little bit to get this lock, this drop-in lock thing took care of. He said, but my beloved had withdrawn or had given up. He gave up on himself and was gone. My soul, my nephesh, and that means I emphatically failed when he spoke, when I heard his voice. I sought, or I looked and asked for him, but I could not find him. I called him. I cried out his name, probably over and over, but he gave me no answer. Then in verse 7 it says, the watchmen that were about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. And the keeper of the walls took away my veil from me. So she was still dreaming all this stuff. But because Solomon would have taken them down a notch or two if that would have really happened, you know. But evidently the watchmen were those that were guarding Solomon and his group somewhere. She had gotten out and they said the watchmen that were about, and they were the night patrol or Solomon's guards. They found or they located me. They smote or hit me. They wounded me. They caused injury and pain to me. And not only that, but the keeper of the walls or the head watchman then took away my veil from me. And in Jerusalem, to an Easterner, you just didn't do that. You didn't. Pulling a woman's veil off is like making her naked in public. In Jerusalem, that was a gross insult to an Eastern woman, because you got to remember, she was pretty dark skinned. She was almost like a black person. And we just don't really understand in her mind what kind of things she felt about this dream and about it happening to her, because she's telling it just like it was real, you know, but it was a dream. Verse 8. And this is what she says to him. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that ye tell him that I am sick of love. And she says, I beg of you, I charge you, I beg of you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find or locate my beloved shepherd, that you tell or say to him that I am sick of love, or that I am very love sick, because that's really what she's saying. That I am very love sick. I want to see him. I want to be with him. And then from the 5th chapter, verse 9, to the 6th chapter, verse 3, this is the discourse with daughters of Jerusalem. And they speak to the Shulamite woman here. And I think verse 9 is the only verse that after she gets done telling them this story about her dream, then this is what you find in verse 9. And they ask her, what is thy beloved more than another beloved? What's so wonderful about your guy? Oh, thou fairest among women, what is thy beloved more than another beloved, that thou dost so charge us? Why are you charging us? Why are you saying, if you see him, I'm going to beg you to tell him what I'm going through here. And so he says, what is thy beloved? Why is your shepherd more than other beloved? What makes him better than other suitors or other people that would fall in love with you? Oh, thou fairest among women. And they recognize her beauty also, like Solomon did. And then they asked the question on, said, what is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou doest so charge us? Or what makes you beg so unto us to tell him if you see him? And then she talks back to them in verse 10. And so we get into verse 10, and it says this. And she really lays it on kind of thick from here down to the end of chapter 5. And she don't leave many stones unturned when she talks about him and how she sees how he's put together and, you know, and all this stuff. So she makes a pretty good little point of getting across to these women what she sees in her man. So the Shulamite again speaks to the women and says, my beloved shepherd is white and ruddy. He says, also he's the chiefest or the head of the flag bearer of among 10,000. So she has got him held up in very high esteem. She said, he's best of 10,000. He's the flag bearer. He's the one carrying the flag. He's the chief man. Verse 10, he said, and he's white and he's ready. And then we get down to verse 11. And in verse 11 it says, his head is as the most fine gold, and his locks are bushy and black as a raven. So she's got him figured out pretty much right down to the T. He says his head is as the most fine gold or the purest gold. As pure as they could get gold in those days. She said that's what his head was like. He was like somebody with a head of gold, but his locks or his head of hair are or is bushy. It's thick and flowing, and it's black. And it's black as a raven or as a crow. And, you know, when you get a crow in the sunshine and you get to look at him, he's so black, he's almost blue.
Purpley
blue. And so this is the way she saw her shepherd. So she's explaining to these ladies what he is like to her. And then in verse 12, it says, his eyes are as the eyes of doves by the rivers of water. washed with milk and fitly set. And I had a little problem with this for a little bit, but I think we finally realize what she's saying here. His eyes are as, or like as, the eyes of a dove, or when these birds are mating. We've been through this before. And a dove's eyes during the mating season are enlarged. They get bigger. It's like when you put drops in your eyes at the doctor's office and they dilate them and your pupil gets bigger. That's what she, I guess whenever they were kissing or something, and she thought his eyes got bigger because she was that much closer to him. Okay. And it talks about by the rivers of water or the channels. And of course, doves, kind of have a problem with getting water to their young. And so quite often they'll mate and nest fairly close to where they can get water because it's a little tough for them to fly with that much water for their young. And it says washed or bathed or cleaned with milk and fitly set. So when she's talking about these enlarged eyes, she sets them up to like a stone set in a ring or a gem, a polished gem that's set into a ring. It's washed and cleaned and put in there, and it's beautiful. It's just like a beautiful ring. And so, you know, you got to use a little bit of your mind to get all this going. So she's talked about his head, his eyes, and now she's going to talk about his cheeks. And, you know, he talked about her in kind of the same way. And, you know, you remember it said it, her cheeks under that hair looked like pomegranates that had been cut, and he could see it through her hair. And so she says his cheeks are as a bed of spices, as sweet flowers. His lips like lilies, dropping sweet-smelling myrrh. So she's got him all figured out. Beds of balsam, or balsam there is a type of a fir tree or a pine, if you will, or cedar or something like that. A balsam is a sweet-smelling fir tree, okay, as sweet flowers. It, you know, I don't know how they bloom, but she is talking here about a tree that bears sap or rosin for soothing sores or things that a person gets on their hands and arms and legs or whatever. It's kind of like aloe, like you'd put aloe on you if you got sunburnt or things like that. That's just what she say. And his lips are like lilies, dropping or dripping wet with sweet smelling myrrh. And of course, I think lilies, just about all kinds of lilies have a fairly sweet smell to them. And so they evidently grew abundantly over there in those days or that time. And then she goes on to his hands. His hands are like, are as gold rings set with beryl. His belly is as bright ivory overlaid with sapphire. His hands are as gold rings or like golden finger cylinders or like you would slap gold things over your fingers. And, like a glove or for protection. And it says set with the beryl. And that is an emerald or what we would call today maybe aquamarine. And maybe, or maybe the nails were aquamarine, a kind of a clear or bluish. From a blue to a light, blue to a clear substance, this, the nails on the fingers. Okay. His belly is as bright or very ivory or very polished, overlaid with sapphires. And the best I could come up with this that he wasn't the devil, so I kind of felt like that he had a necklace that was hanging down in front of his chest. And so she was seeing his torso was very polished and overlaid with sapphires. And I guess it was his necklace that was very ornate or that beautiful to her that would kind of stick out or something to be remembered. And in 15, it says his legs are as pillars of marble set upon sockets of fine gold. His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. So she got it all figured out here. He goes all the way from the tip of his head down to his legs down and gets the whole work. She is, as far as he has let her see, she loves what she's seen. His legs are as pillars of marble or white marble set upon socket bases. A fine or pure gold. His countenance, his aspect, is as Lebanon. It is excellent. As the choice of cedars that are outstanding in majesty. So he is, she's talking about his legs and his knees and down to his feet are like white marble and fine gold and the way he carries himself, as excellent or choice as the outstanding in majesty of the cedars that, everybody seems to think so much of over there in that day and that age because, you know, many of the cedars were used in the temple and were cut, hewn out, overlaid with gold and brought there and used in the temple. And then we get down to 16. And I guess, yeah, I'm getting pretty close to running out of time. So we'll do the fifth chapter and we'll stop. But it does go on down through verse 3 of verse 6. And then it picks up with Solomon talking to this young lady and trying to get her trying to tempt her into going being with him. And, but we'll start off with chapter 6 the next time and then get involved in that. And it says, he goes on to mention his mouth again at 16. She goes back to his face again, or to his head and face. It says, his mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So she has went the whole gamut without how she thinks he looks. His mouth is most sweet, his voice and kisses. Yea, he is altogether lovely. He is fervently cherished and desired of her. This is my beloved, she says, my chosen. And this is my friend. He's going to be my life's mate, O daughters of Jerusalem. So she didn't leave no stone unturned, if you will, about explaining who she really wanted. She didn't want to have no part of Solomon. Although she's with that group. And he's back at his, with his flock right now. So they're going to go through the first three verses. And then you're going to get down to where Solomon starts talking to her. And it goes on for a good little bit. So we'll stop there and we'll pick up with it. This is kind of like this is a couple of scenes that we went through here, the dream and her telling us what she thought her beloved looked like to the ladies and expressed in no uncertain terms that she didn't want Solomon, she wanted her shepherd. And that she is still waiting on that shepherd. And so, chapter 6 pretty much deals with Solomon trying to persuade her. He tried a little bit back yonder in one of the earlier chapter 3, I believe. Chapter 3 a little bit, but then he kind of bears down on her a little bit in 6 and sees that he's not really going to get anywhere, so. That gives you the idea that she is becoming an overcomer. That she is going to overcome Solomon at all costs. She's not going to
bow
or fall before him to his whims and wills. And I think she just didn't want to be another in the group. Basically what that amounts to. So thank you for going through that with me, and that we hopefully we kept you enthused and in line here with what's being said and how it was said and kind of what was being said. And, you know, and to realize that she was so in love with this guy that they wouldn't anything going to deter her from getting the man she wanted, even a king. She was going to deny the king. So we'll pick up with it next time. And let's see, we got 6, 7, and 8 to go, so that's probably going to be about 3 more lessons till we get to the end of that. And then we're going to talk about some verses of scripture that deals with her being adamantly focused to one individual and didn't give up, didn't change everything. Regardless of what was thrown at her, she kept the faith. Course, yeah. Kept the faith, kept on the line. And that's That's how it should be with us in Christ. And I got to thinking about that a little bit this week, and I hadn't talked to Tiny, but I got to thinking about what Davis said, that she had was studying and looking and kind of like wasn't taking her housework as good as it should have been. But if I had something to say to her today or tomorrow, I think I would say, Tiny, when you really get involved in looking for the truth and you're searching for that truth, then it really becomes something to you, because the Lord is not going to waste his time getting you involved with the mystery if you hadn't been chosen to see it.
Amen.
And to understand it. So let's keep on digging. Thank you again, folks, and we'll talk at you next week, and we'll be with Ronnie, Lord willing, on Sunday, and we'll continue on our studies. Thank you so much.